Boker Tov World. Today's daf in Masechet Chulin brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh is daf Nun Hey. We got sort of ahead yesterday, and we are all the way in the middle of the daf, so that we were up to Nitel HaTchul. Omra Bavira, Mishmei Derava. This din is something we saw before. This halacha is only if the spleen was missing. But if there was a hole in the spleen, then it's not to be included in this Mishnah of Elu Kisherot. Then it actually is a trefa. So if there was a hole, then it's trefa. The halacha is, surprisingly, that since the Torah says in the dinim, of the heter achila, which behemah samutah b'achila, the Torah says v'chol behemah mafreset parasa v'shosa chesa, etc. Ma'alegira ba behemah. So what do you mean ba behemah? What's that supposed to mean? Obviously, it says v'chol behemah. If we're not talking about the class of behemoth, so what are we talking about if we say v'chol behemah? Therefore, we understand the word ba behema to mean exactly what it says, inside of an animal, ba behema. So from there we learn that if you shech the mother, anything in the mother is included in that shechita. Now you think, okay, so that means I understand that the child is considered to be a part of the mother, perhaps. And therefore, the same way that the shechita of the aim is matir the aim, it's matir that part of the aim. That's what you'd think. However, what Rabbi Yossi Bar Zvida, Rabbi Yossi Bar Ovi, is mechadish over here. Well, I shouldn't say that. What he's asking over here from the halacha that we know is without him, which is that choteich me'uber shebe'me'eha. Let's say you cut a piece of a fetus off and you leave it inside of the womb and you shecht the mother. It's still mutar b'achila, despite the fact that the fetus no longer has this as part of its body, which is amazing. So that means ba behema, as long as it's still within the mother, whatever is left inside the mother, even if it's been detached, so the entire fetus, including that piece, is mutar b'achila. But what about if you cut off the mother's spleen, and you leave the spleen inside of the mother, and even if it's inside of the animal at the time of the shechita sa'im is not matir parts of the aim that are left inside. It's matir whatever is in the womb. So, what does that mean? I mean, it doesn't make any sense to say this. If you're telling me you cut off a piece of the tchol, so then that means that the tchol has a hole in it, say the least. It's missing half of itself. You're saying that you cannot eat it. It's asur b'achila, asur b'achila. But the animal, the mother itself, that has a hole in its spleen, is mutar b'achila. So how does this make sense? You're claiming that a hole in the spleen asurs, and it's only a missing spleen that is mutar. Here it's clear that a behema gufa sharia, the actual mother with the hole, or half a spleen missing, is kosher. No, it doesn't mean that, says the Gemara. The fact is that it's true that even the behema would itself be asur. Why do we say that it's mutter and asur b'achila if the whole animal is asur b'achila? That's just to keep it parallel. Because since in the first part of the Mishnah, it says mutar b'achila, that was talking about where you cut off a piece of the uber itself. So there, it's mutar b'achila. So there, for the sefer of the Mishnah, it also says that it's asur b'achila. But it doesn't mean that only that piece is asur b'achila. The entire animal is asur b'achila because of a hole in the spleen. Or, look, if you don't like this answer, which I understand why you wouldn't like it, you could say that the truth is that maybe a cut through the spleen is not the equivalent of a hole in the spleen. In other words, it could be some, look, obviously this, the whole reality over here, the medical reality is strange. if you have a spleen with a hole, then you have a trapha. But if you cut off the entire spleen, you don't have a problem. So anyway, it means we don't have a clear-cut understanding of the nature of this issue of knee cave. Maybe it has to do with pressure in the spleen. Maybe if you cut off half of the spleen, then that's not the same problem as having a hole in the spleen. I don't know. Because as we said, we don't have enough information about these inyanim of trepha to be able to make those kind of determinations and say this or that is logical. So therefore, could be, you could say nikev l'chud and nechtach l'chud. A hole would be indeed a trepha, and maybe a slit cutting off half of the t'chol is not necessarily a trepha. Anyway, let's move on to the next case in the Mishnah. The next case is nitlu hakvayot. How about if you removed the kidneys? So Amar Rakesh Bar Papa Mishrei D'Rav, remember, we had the halacha before that in the event that you have a kidney that is lokta. Lokta means that it's got clearly a terrible infection. It's filled with pus. It's decaying. So even one kloya is considered to be a trefa in the event that it was lokta instead of nitva. So here, once again, we have a indication that there's tremendous differences between something not being there at all, which same thing we had with the spleen. So if you've got a kidney that is diseased, then even one kidney is enough to make it a trefa. Amrei b'marava, and as we saw earlier, in Eretz Yisrael, they explain that this means dafka, where the disease has already reached the charitz. So it got to the furrow that is in the kloya. So rudamati lukuta l'mekom ha-charitz. L'mekom ha-charitz is basically the centerpiece. It's the furrow, all of the various blood supplies and parts of the erythra, and so on. All of this comes from that same place. It all, there's a big, it looks like a big fatty cover over a lot of tubes. And it's true. That's exactly where the entry point is. It's called the sinus of the kidney, the renal sinus. And that is the mokum choritz. And that's where it's a disaster. Where is that mokum choritz? L'chivor detutimati. It refers to all of that whitish looking, looks like a fat because it's a fat cover, a whitish looking area that's underneath the loins. Omer Rabbi Nechunya. So now, let's take a look at the halacha l'maisa, where Rabbi Nechunya says, I spoke to all of the experts, and shaltina l'kula trufoy de marova. I spoke to all of the leading experts of trefas in Eretz Yisrael, and they told me that the halacha is indeed like Rakesh Bar Papa, and that even though a missing kidney is not a trefa, a diseased kidney is a trefa. But they also told me that let ilchata kirev avira. We don't paskin like rev avira, that a spleen, a t'chol, that has a hole in it, he says it's a trefa, we don't paskin like that. And the truth is that what we said over here about Rav Avira, that we don't paskin like him, that's only bikulushe, avo besumche, trefa. So basically, the spleen has one area where it becomes very thin at the end of the spleen. That's when we said that the halacha is not like Rav Avira. But if there's actually a hole that goes through the spleen in the thicker part of the spleen, avo besumche, in the thick part, then we do paskin like him, and it's a trefa, but this is only where the puncture was so deep that there's not the thickness of a dinner zav between the end of the puncture and the end of the spleen. So then, for all intents and purposes, the whole thing has been punctured. But if there's an area that is free of puncture, even if you're talking about the smuchte, and it's the thickness of a dinner zav, then it does not become a trefa. All right, so now we've got much more focused in into what these details are on the t'chol. We've come to understand that there's two different parts of the t'chol. There's the thick main part of the t'chol, and at the end it comes down to a thin continuation. And that thin continuation is not a problem of having a hole And even where we say that we do have a problem, it's only if the hole goes, for all intents and purposes, all the way through. But if there's enough left in the sumche, that's the thickness of a din hazaha, then that's not considered to be a hole that creates a treva. Another thing they say in Eretz Yisrael is that kol ha'pasul b'ri'ah kasher b'kulya. The things that we listed as being a treifa in the case of a rea actually is kosher if the same thing happens to a kulya. Because, look, we know that nekev, that's like the main psul of a rea, you have a hole in the lung, that is kosher when it comes to the kulya. And therefore, we understand that the kulya is a completely different type of structure than the rea is. The kosher king, so wait a minute, doesn't that imply that something that is kosher in the rea for sure should be kosher in the kulya? I mean, if you tell me, even something that's a psul treifa in a rea doesn't bother us when it's in a kidney. So if there's something that even in a rea, which apparently is far less sensitive than a kidney, so if it's kosher in the rea, so then for sure it should be kosher in the kidney. But the problem is that we have a case that is absolutely not like that at all, because this, you're telling me, is a proper implication? The Kololahu, is that true? It's not even true. Remember, we had the case of a rea that is filled with pus. And we said, in the event that is there's air that can get through, that is not considered to be treifas. It's considered to be pneumonia or whatever, but that is not necessarily a treifas. But that same situation is considered to be the lacta bakulia if it's filled. Remember, we said before, said last week, that if it has mugla, if it has pus, then that's considered to be a lacta bakulia. The only time that we say a kulia is not considered to be a lacta is where you have clear fluid, fine, but if you have anything that is filled with bacteria, that is exactly what the case is of the lacta bakulya achat. So here we find a simple case, something that is kosher in a lung, and yet it's also in the kulya. And I thought you said that the din is that if it's, even if it's possible in the lung, it is kosher in the kulya. And look, I mean, we have the case that Rashi says he has no idea what this is supposed to mean. There are attempts to make it meaningful, but we see here they're asking it as a separate question. How about if you have lymphatic fluid, which is kosher in both cases? Aremayim zakim, diksherim hocha v'hocha, those are kosher in both. So, okay, it does his attempts to answer it over here. If Rashi is happy saying he's not sure what it means, we can continue, I think. Elamer Ravashi. Therefore, Ravashi says, the idea of making implications of Hilchos Treifas is ridiculous. I've already discussed this before, and we saw this in the earlier Gemara. Treifas go by mitaladari. What kind of silly thing is this? You're comparing treifas one to another. So you're saying, if this is kosher in a rea, for sure it's kosher in a koi. What kind of silliness is that? Ein omrim, this was a klal that we had in treifas. Ein omrim betreifot zo doma lezu. You don't use logic to discuss the realities of organic responses. The fact is, chotcha mikan v'meita, chotcha mikan v'chaita. You can cut in one place and the animal will die. So the classic example of this is you cut through the tzomes hagidim, and that's like towards the bottom of the leg. And here, if you cut even from the top of the leg, it doesn't make any difference. So how is that? That where it looks like it doesn't even matter, and you're just holding at the ankle, what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is something you don't know anything about, which is a nerve center that actually does affect. So when are you going to bring a riot about what is good for a lung is bad for a kidney? What is it? Silliness. Different parts of the body have different organic structures, and you can't learn one from the other at all. By the way, when we mentioned that piece about clear liquid, that clear liquid does not only depend on what it looks like. It depends on what it smells like. So these mayim zakim, who said if you have clear water and that's not a problem, not in the lungs and not in the kidneys, that's Mayim Zakim are not only completely clear. Which you would have thought Mayim Zakim means it's not thick pus. No, it means completely clear water, not cloudy water. And if it's Achire, even if it's just cloudy, it's not colored like pus, it's still considered to be a Lactobacillus. And it's Trefa. And even if it's mamish clear into your eyes, lo amanon de lo seriach, that's only if it doesn't smell like it's holding rotten organic matter. But if it smells, then that means forget it. This is a Lactobacillus. Avo seriach Trefa, for sure. The nose is very sensitive to actually rotting tissues and is a raya that it's considered to be a Lactobacillus. Now let's talk about another issue, shriveled up kidneys. Now, we have something like this in the lung. It's only something like it. We had charuta, remember? So the charuta was an anaphylactic reaction in the lung, and that means that the lung just sort of becomes hardened and shriveled. That, if it's caused by something that's not natural, like a bolt, like a thunderbolt or something. So if it's caused by something that an Adam scared it with, is a psul. How about a kuya that also shriveled? Now, this has nothing to do with anaphylaxis. This is just obviously some kind of disease in the kidney. And the kidney shriveled up. So the size that we can allow it to go to, bedaka atkepol, if it's all the way down to the size of a bean instead of a normal kidney, in a small animal, that's a psul. In a large animal, even if it shrunk down to the size of a medium-sized grape, that's also a sign that for all intents and purposes, it's a lukta. Okay, then the next case that we had. Remember, the Mishnah went through every case that was in the original Mishnah and contrasted it to a slightly different situation in the second Mishnah, which is not Trefa. So here the case was, Nitel Lechi HaTachto. So, remember we said that if you take off the Lechi HaTachto, what that means is that you carefully peel it away so that the simonim themselves are still attached to the connective tissue that was originally part of this lower jaw. And you remove the bone, but all other structures except for the actual bone are untouched. So when do we say that that is not a trefa? That's only where it is possible to maintain the life of the animal. Now, this is a very important nekuda, because it shows you that if you're talking about, let's say, the missing cloyote, so we said, okay, it could get along without the cloyote as long as you would be able to clear the blood. Well, how would you clear the blood without kidneys? So it's not, as I mentioned yesterday, it's not all that difficult in a ruminant to clear the blood without kidneys. It's true that you would have to actually make sure that every once in a while you flood the entire peritoneum with water, but that's all that you need, and that would be enough to maintain life. So you say, yeah, but that's not real organic life. Here we find that if you can maintain life artificially, so in the case that we just spoke about, this animal cannot eat. So how can you call an organism that is obviously not able to survive on its own, how could you call that Eluke Sherot? Does that make sense? It makes sense if medical intervention will help it. So if you can artificially feed this animal, and you essentially, you take food, crush it up, and you force it down its throat, then it will live. Fine, so then it's kosher. Therefore, says Rabbi Zeira, and as I say, this is an important nekuda, because the question is, what level of medical interference do we say is considered to be kosher? So if you say, nitel hakloyot, you could always do a kidney transplant. I mean, is that what we're talking about? So here, loshana leshicho lalich yota yedei li'ita v'hamra'a. So if you're talking about doing like Esav asked for, hala'itenina, remember that? Just pour it down, buddy, pour it down. And then you can force it down, force feed it down its throat. So fine, if it'll live like that, then that's okay. But the Mishnah is not referring to a case where you cannot artificially keep it alive. So then it's obviously, if whatever is wrong makes it impossible to get food down its throat at all, so then it's considered to be a trefa. Next case we had, hysterectomy. So now you removed the uterus. Nitla imshala is considered to be kosher. Now this uterus we've been referring to in many different ways. Here we're calling it the aim, the mama. And that's a logical thing to use for a uterus. But we find that throughout the sugyas, there are also other terminologies that refer to exactly the same organ. And therefore, hi ha'em, hi tarpachat, hi shalfuchit, all of them contextually, these three words could all refer to the uterus. Okay, next thing we had was anaphylactic lung. And if it said in the here over here, if that happens, bidei shamayim, so then it's kosher. So in other words, the allergic response that is the source of this anaphylaxis is actually has evolved in such a way that anything natural is accommodated and rapidly is restored, and it does not become a trefa. But if it's not something that the animal would have met in the course of its natural evolution, then the anaphylaxis is fatal. So therefore, says the Mishnah, it depends. If the charuta was bidei shamayim, if this happened, this reaction happens because of something that is part of nature, let's say there's a big thunderstorm, the animal is scared because of the thunder, that's not a problem. Tana Rabbana, when we're talking about a charuta, let's define it. A zoe charuta. Charuta is a shriveled lung. The same lashon that we utilized before about the klaya, obviously different sources, but a charuta is called samkare ashala. So if this happens, bidei shamayim, then it would be kosher. But if exactly the same reaction takes place because somebody fired a gun in its ear instead of a thunder, then it's a trefa. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer, af bidei kol abriot. It's also the same if some other creature caused it. What's the same? It's a very opaque statement. It's the same as bidei shamayim, or it's the same as bidei adam. Thank you very much. Says the Gemara, what are you talking about? Did Reb Shimon ben Elazar, was he referring to the Reisha? And he was saying the same thing that is called natural would be true if a lion roars in its ear. That's natural. Or does he mean the same thing as firing a gun in its ear, where it's done not as part of a non-organic natural occurrence? So if a human does it, the same thing is true if a lion shoots off a gun or a roar in its ear. It's also going to be a charusa. So is he going on the seifa, what was bidei adam? And he's saying, not only bidei adam, but bidei any animal. Maybe that's what he's going, in which case he's saying it's l'chumra, and that would be considered to be a charuta. So, EpiPens, huh? They don't help you for the animal not to be. We haven't figured out how to get the animal to give itself that injection. Okay, not the same as stuffing down the food. So Tashma is actually a brayta in which Reb Shimon ben Elazar explains himself very clearly. The Tanya, charuta bidei adam is trefa, and Reb Shimon ben Elazar omer, forget about bidei adam, af bidei kol abriot. So here he explains he's referring to chumra, and he's saying even if it was not. Even if you'll say, but isn't a roar of a lion part of nature? Yes, but it's not what we call bidei shamayim. It's an interference by another organism. So he obviously meant to be machmir, and he considers that level of charuta to be a trefa. Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, the cause of Bimidbara, so once Rabbi Bar Bar Chana was traveling through a place of wilderness, and he finds these dichri that some agreeing. He finds these. He's very happy. Wow. He's got these rams, plenty to eat. Shechshman. Turns out that the lungs were actually shriveled up. Now, he had no idea of whether he has to worry about this, or can he assume that this happened because of some natural event. And a natural event, as we said, in the Mishnah, is considered to be kshera. So he went to ask in the Beis Din, Osi Shobim in Russia. Omrulay, so they said there is actually a bedika for this. What we have to do is we have to see whether we can reconstitute the normal structure of the lung when it's shriveled. And how do we do that? By attempting to rehydrate the lung. So this is very sensitive to temperature, and therefore you have to make sure that you're not messing up your test, and it depends on the season and what the temperature is like outside. So they said to him, look, in the summer, when it's hot, what you do is you bring the kaita in the summertime, aite mishichle chivore, bring a large bowl, big enough to hold the lung, and fill it with cold water. And if it's white, at least it's not going to absorb energy, so it'll stay cool as long as possible. Leave it soaking for a full 24 hours. So anchinu me'et la'et. Then take a look and check and see whether the lung has become rehydrated and now has a normal structure. So ihadran barian. If it works within 24 hours, that's a sign that the original charusa was bidei shamayim, and therefore it's not a treifa. So here we see very clearly that this is not some kind of magical difference. It's actually a physical difference in the way the charuta affects the lungs. They are rehydratable in the event that it was bidei shamayim. They are not rehydratable, at least not without heroic measures. But that's why we're telling you, take normal temperatures. If it goes back to normal, then that is a sign it was bidei shamayim, because otherwise it wouldn't have gotten back to normal in 24 hours. Yilo, it's treifa. If it's winter, so you don't want to have ice-cold water, so what you should do is you bring mishichle shichumi. You bring darker color, a bowl. Obviously, it's a large, like a basin. Fill it up with lukewarm water, so it doesn't get too cold. Leave it again on ichenu mi'et la'et. And here too, ihadra varia kshera mi'ilo shreifa. Wow. So it's an actual physical difference in the lung. Is the reaction reversible through hydration or not? Amazing. Okay. The next thing that we had in the Mishnah was our gluda. Remember, I gave you a simon. How do you remember what a gluda is? Because they make skins into glue. So gluda would mean where the skin is missing on the animal. So tenor up on. A gluda, Rabbi Meir Mashir, ve'chachamin posli. And fa'he'ide Elazar Safra. Many years ago, even at the time of the Beis Hamikdash, where we had Elazar Safra, we had Yochanan ben Gudgadah, they were made that they have a Kabbalah, that a gluda is a psul. Omer Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Well, the truth is, Rabbi Meir had charota, and he in the end came around to recognizing that, look, this is an old Kabbalah, gluda is a treifa. And he dropped his stance that gluda is kosher. Michlal, so what you're saying over here, that Rabbi Meir changed his mind, you're trying to say that according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, it's clear that Rabbi Meir was arguing l'chatchima, which is the way we had it. I mean, we saw the whole time that Rabbi Meir said it's kshera. So, but you're saying that according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, that he buys into that. And originally, Rabbi Meir argued, and then he changed his mind. The problem is that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar taught in a braisa that there never was a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim about a gluda. Now he's contradicting himself. Take a look at this. V'atanya, Omer Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, lo nechleku Rabbi Meir v'chachamim al gluda shepsula. There never was such a machlokas about a gluda. Of course, a gluda is pasul. Always was. V'ukvar heid Rabbi Shaya ben Osher Rabbi Yehuda habasam lifnei Rabbi Akiva mishum Rabbi Tarfon al gluda shepsula. I mean, this is like an old sukkah, but he's going to argue on Rabbi Meir. Never argued on that. But in Nishtayer book, is Selah Tashera. The skin can regenerate. It can only regenerate if you have a full Selah size worth of living skin, then it can regenerate. But meanwhile, we see that Reb Shimon ben Elazar says they never argued. I mean, that's what he seems to be saying. And here he says that Rebbe Meir changed his mind. So which way is it? Om Reb Nachum bar Yitzchak. He didn't mean lo nechlaku, that there never was a machlokas. He meant there is no standing machlokas. Lo nechlaku. He means he changed his mind. Lo amad Rebbe Meir b'machlokuto. He didn't maintain that stance. And in the end, we don't have a shita that a gluda is kosher. Anyway, you just raised a very important new idea, which is that you can actually regenerate skin. Man, oh man, can you regenerate skin? Let me tell you something. You know how they do it today. I mean, it's amazing. Over here, the Gemara says you need to have a Selah in one place. But what do they do today? They take a Selah worth of skin, chop it up in so finely that it's almost back to a cellular level. Mix it with 500 times as much of nutrients and spray it all over the body and burn victims and so on, and they can regenerate the skin. You don't need to have like a full cover of skin. That's brilliant, no? Anyway, but it's the same idea. The skin can regenerate, but you need a cell in one place. You could spread that cell across the whole body. Ingenious. Okay, anyway, so in the Steyer book, a cell shera. Now, if this cell is in one location, is there a specific location where the skin will regenerate that is considered to be like a primary node for regeneration? Or is this just anywhere? Heicha. Where would that cella worth of skin have to be in order for the entire skin to regenerate? Omer Yehuda Omer Shmuel, it would have to run down the entire length of the spine. Now, again, this could mean the same shtick that they do nowadays. In other words, you chop it up in such a way that it covers the entire length of the spine. It's one way to understand it. The other way to understand it is that when we said kisela, we didn't mean just one square cella. We meant the width of a cella along the entire spine. Which one did you mean? So Iboilu, the orich vekotin, do you mean that you have like very thin piece of skin that goes down the entire spine so that if you would have it all in one spot, it would be the size of a cella? Is that what you mean? Or do you mean the width of a full cella along the entire spine? Tashma. Rav Nehurai heard directly from Shmuel. No, actually the name of Shmuel, but directly to Shmuel Paskin. That Berochav never heard it directly to. He's quoting it from Shmuel. I don't know whether he is a Talmud or not. It means not just one cella worth, but the width of a cella along the spine. Whereas Rabbi Bar Bachana says, that's not it. It's basically a cella on the roshei prakim. So now, this would mean joints. Right? The question is, from Rashi's Mashma, that he's saying you need a cella on each roshei prakim. That's an awful lot of skin. And others learn it means one place, as long as it's on a Rosh HaPrakim, it's on a joint, then it will spread across the body. And Rebbe Elazar ben Antigonus, Bishum Rebbe Elazar ben Hanayomer, it should be at the navel. And that is the place where the original generation is of the skin. And so therefore, if you have living skin at the navel, it will regenerate. By Rebbe Yanai, Rabbi Yishmael, when you're identifying these essential locations, does it work in the opposite way? You're saying these are essential locations for regeneration. Is the opposite also true? That if you remove the skin from these particular places, that then the skin will degenerate, and therefore what you're looking at is a incipient gluda. And we said that incipience in trephus is considered to be the equivalent of it's already getting there. What's the matter, boys? Are you getting bored by Ilchus trephus? Do you have to withdraw in Ilchus trephus? Do you go like you get a little bit nauseous when you talk about Ilchus trephus? Is that it? You get like queer inside, you know, oh my gosh, he's talking about blood and guts and what's your problem? Why do I not see you, huh? Coming across funny because of Ilchus trephus? Oh, I'm so sorry. What can we do to help you? Gee. All right, so at least we know anybody who doesn't have the guts to show his face is probably a sissy. Ah, there we go. Doesn't seem to have affected anyone. Well, Akiva's point is probably well taken. In South Africa, we get hungry. Well said. Anyway, come on. Nobody's going to show up over here. Naftali, come on. Tsuri, how do you allow them to keep the Daf Yomi from you? This is ridiculous. Ori, what are you allowing your father to turn off the screen? I'm telling you, you can't trust anybody anymore. Okay, so now, boy, Rabbi Yanai Rabbi Shmuel, does this work in the inverse? Are these considered to be not only spots of regeneration, but centers of degeneration? So let's say the whole body is covered with skin, except for the Mokom HaShidra. The rest of it is Kulo Kayin. But the very place that you said was critical for regeneration is missing skin. Or how about, according to Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yanai, we took just the skin off of the area around the navel, and everything else is okay. Or what about according to Rabbi Baruch Hanan, who says, Nitu Rosh, you put it on the Rosh HaProkim. How about if it was Nitu Rosh HaProkim? What if all the Rosh HaProkim were missing? So here it's Mashman like Rashi, you see, that it really is a function of all of the Rosh HaProkim. What's the din? No information. Take. Now, there are other shitas, because what we've learned right now is three different shitas about a very critical location for the regeneration to take place. But Rav says, there's no such thing. There's no critical location. Kol ha'or kovo matzil begudah. Truth is, doesn't matter where the skin is, a cello worth of living skin somewhere on the body will regenerate, unless you're talking about the or of the beta prasot. Now, the or of the beta prasot is the entire thin, you know what you're looking at when you're looking at an animal's foot. It, as I said, the foot looks like a leg, and people think it's a leg. It's a foot. The foot has this grayish covering, a very thin covering, and there's nothing there that looks like normal skin. It's covered with this special or beta prasot. Now, the thing is that the or beta prasot is listed as a special halacha in the Mishnah that we're going to have in our Varotev, and it is not considered to be skin. It actually has a din of basar. So let's take a look and see, how about lagabe this halacha? Because there are halachas that will differentiate between skin and basar, right? Lagabe inyanim that has to do with korbanos or tumah v'tayra. So let's take a look and see how those other halachas impinge on the din over here. So as Rav says, it doesn't matter where the skin is, but it does have to be real skin. And the or around the beit haprasot is not really skin. The Rabbi Yochanan Omar, no. Even the or beit haprasot is considered to be skin for this purpose. The or beit haprasot will regenerate too. As long as you have a cella of the or beit haprasot, according to Rav's approach, that you don't have a critical area. So, boy, mine Rabasi, mi Rabbi Yochanan, not knowing what Rabbi Yochanan shita was, Rabasi asked him, what would be the din of the or beit haprasot? Will it be matzil begluda or not? And Rabbi Yochanan said to him, yes, like we just learned, it will be matzil. So Rabbi Asi said to him, but Rebbe, how could that be? L'imadetenu Rabbeinu. You taught us the Mishnah in our Orvarotav that says, Elusha Oroteyam Kibisaron. The following things, the Or has the din of actual Basar, and you list it over there, Or Beta Prasat. So you see that it's not considered to be skin. And that was Nogea, the Halacha of Tumah V'Taira, and so on. So Rabbi Yochanan said to Ravasi, listen, stop getting on my nerves, man. I'll talk Nitaini. You're driving me nuts asking that. It's true I taught you that. But that entire Mishnah I hold is Beloshen Yochid. I hold that that is true only according to Rabbi Shimon, as we'll learn over there. I don't learn that that's the real Stam Mishnah. And therefore, you can't bring your Raya from there. Where do we see that that's, it's a Das Yochid? The Tanya. We have a Brisa, which this Brisa is talking about a Machsheves Pigel, or Machsheves Chutz L'Mekomo. And it requires more than a meditative stance, which Alon has taken, in which his Machsheva is actually up in the Shamayim, and he's preparing for very profound Tachanunim and so on. But the Daf Yomi requires the concentration on this world. And so, welcome home, Alon. So, it says over there in the Braita that if somebody shechs an Eila, and he has in mind that why an Eila? Because an Eila, every last bit of the Eila is burnt on the Mizbeah, and the Kohen has a Machshava lahatir kizayis mi'or shel tachat ha'alya. So now, one of the special skins that are mentioned there in the Orva Rotev is the very soft skin-like covering that's directly under the fat tail of a keves. And he had in Kavana to bring that chutz l'mekomo. Okay, that's a psul of chutz l'mekomo, but there's ofi of karis because, as you'll recall from Zvochim, a machsheves chutz l'mekomo does not create an iser karis. Okay, so it's an iser lav, it's posul, but ein bo karet. But what if the Kohen had in mind to actually bring that chutz l'zmano? So chutz l'zmano, the whole idea of chutz l'zmano, is that it's pigel mamish, and it's chayovin alav karet. Elazar ben Yehuda, this is the original Elazar ben Yehuda, not to be confused with the later. I see. Forget it, guys, I'm giving up. Okay, Eliezer ben Yehuda, he says, Ish iblim amar mishum Rabbi Yaakov, and Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, Ish Ikus Omer Mishum Rabbi Shimon. And this is why I say it's a Das Yochit. Echad Or, I'll somehow manage to continue. It's a good thing I got these EpiPens. So, Echad Or Beit HaPrasot. Now we're talking about various skins that Mishnah in Or Varotav claims are not skins, and they have a dinner bus. So all of that was said by, in the name of Rabbi Shimon. Now, whether we're talking about the Or of the Beit HaPrasot, or we're talking about another case in the Mishnah, of the Or on the head of a newborn egel, which is also very, very thin, and has that same grayish look, or shantachat ha'alya, and anything else that was in that Mishnah. Kol shemanu chachamim gabe tuma, in the Mishnah that begins with, quote, elu sha'aroteyam kibisaran, etc. Anything mentioned in that Mishnah, all of those orot, I have a different opinion on. And I want to say, what am I referring to? I'm referring to the skin around the labia of the vagina. That is all also considered to be extremely soft. It's not really skin. It's not really labia because the animal doesn't have the same exact vaginal structure. But Or Beit HaBoshet is included in the same idea. So, all of those, I say, chutz l'mekomo, posav engel koris. Chutz l'zmano, Pigo Vachayamim, of course. That is real basar. That is meant to be put on the Mizbeach, and therefore, it's not included in the or which is given to the Kohanim. It is going to create a pigo. And you see, according to this, that the things in the Mishnah are definitely Adas Yachi. The Tanakama over here said this is true only for the Or Shetacha Sa'alya. But that's the Shita of the Chachami. So Rabbi Yochanan says, you see that all of the things that were in the Mishnah and Arv Arotev, you're right in asking me, but Altak Pitani. As I explained there in Arv Arotev, I was basically going according to my Shita, but that Mishnah is essentially a Das Yachid.